petit comme trésorier du PDO our advocate Jensen, the media, if any, the support staff, and all the colleagues, you're all welcome. I'm not going to waste more time because I understand members they have requested that it's a special kind of a meeting today because it's a Monday. We requested to have a meeting on a Monday. Usually Mondays are for constituency work, but I really want to appreciate your cooperation and your availability. So I will try everything in my power to make sure that I don't delay you to go and do your constituency work if you have to or part ways. In the apologies, members, I think we all have the package. Do we? That, do you have the package? Okay. Thank you. Thank you. In the apologies, the next item is the apologies. I've received only one apology from Mama Rehani, Honorable Mama Rehani, and on her behalf, we have Honorable Sheikh, who's going to represent Limpopo. Oh, we've also received from the Secretariat, so we have received the apology from Mr. Mkiva, who's going to be represented by Honorable Hai. He will represent Gauteng. So sorry, Eastern Cape. The look. Both looks from Ryder and Kai. You can exchange, we can go to Eastern Cape. My apologies, members. Coming to number three, members, I think we know the purpose of the meeting. We're supposed to have this meeting on Friday last week because the Division of Revenue Bill was entertained or was processed in the LA last week. What was the date? Wednesday. I don't remember the exact date. So only after that we would have been able to go to provinces to seek mandate based on what the NA have decided on. So all provinces have sent their responses, and what I'm going to request, we will go alphabetically. Each province will give us the mandate. And if there are issues that have been raised by a province, please indicate those issues that have been raised by the province. We have also tried to be progressive enough to, as soon as we receive the mandate, together with the reports, we have sent them to Christine from Treasury, so that they can go through them and try to prepare responses for today. I don't know, they might have not received the signature from the minister or the DG, but at least they will be able to speak to them. They are prepared. So with that, I'm going to start with Eastern Cape. Honorable Hai.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Morning to members, morning to Treasury Department, Budget Office, and PMG. I will read the mandate. It's addressed to the Chairperson of Select Committee on Appropriation, and the name of the bill is Division of Revenue Amendment Bill, B15-2019. It's dated 21st November. 2019. The vote of the legislature, the province votes in favor of the bill and mandates the Eastern Cape delegate to the NCOP to negotiate in favor of the adoption of the bill. The province, however, has the following concerns. One, the current funding model of the provincial roads maintenance grant does not favor the Eastern Cape province in that it is a rural province and there is a lower number of surface tarred roads in comparison with other provinces, and therefore the funding for the maintenance is only applicable to the fewer number of surfaced or tarred roads. Two, the bill must clarify the roles and responsibility in the areas of delivery of water and electricity between local and district municipalities, as well as ESCOM. Three, ESCOM must improve its capacity to service the inaccessible areas of the province, as this results in the withdrawal of funding due to the utility not being able to access these areas, and thus not utilizing all the funds allocated, as is the case currently with the Integrated National Electrification Program, or program grant, the INEP. Last one, the province has quantified its infrastructure backlogs and made a submission to the FFC in 2016-2017, and this was also raised with the National Treasury. However, no specific response has been forthcoming as yet. The mandate is signed by the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Finance, Honorable V. Luana. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Khai. Can you go to Free State?
Thank you, Chair. Morning, honorable members, officials from Treasury and PBO, and the supporting staff. On behalf of the Free State, name of the bill, Division of the Revenue Amendment Bill, date 21st November 2019, vote of the legislature. The Portfolio Committee on Public Account and Finance, as designed by the Free State Legislature. The Portfolio Committee votes in favor of the bill with the following inputs: that the current equitable share formula be reviewed as it is not biased towards the rural and poor municipalities. The centrality of the Free State province in the country places an extra burden on its resources. The infrastructure, e.g. roads, are overused and maintenance thereof depletes the financial resources, and accordingly it deserves extra funding to bear the costs emanating from its centrality. The Free State province is one of the drought-stricken areas in the country currently, as it is one of the key agricultural economic hubs in the country. Drought has their consequences and will affect many. Therefore, it is imperative that funds be allocated for drought relief. There should be a special allocation for the unfunded mandates to lower levels of government, e.g. implementation of Section 139 of municipalities. These mandates are implemented at a cost to provinces. Integrated National Electrification Program grant and municipality system improvement grant must be reviewed, as it has a negative bearing on municipalities. The reduction of NHI grants to the province from direct to indirect remains a concern. Water catchment in Fixback and Fikabazu is a concern. National Treasury must ensure that Section 29 of the Division of Revenue Act is effectively implemented to the affected municipalities. Signed by the chairperson of the committee, Honorable V. Chabalala. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mulatsane. We now go to Honorable Ryder, Gauteng.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chair, yes, the Gauteng Committee sat in deliberation. We had our public participation as well. The negotiating mandate has been submitted by the committee, although it hasn't been signed off. It hasn't appeared before the full legislature as yet. That meeting will only happen tomorrow. Just to give some outlines to the public participation and some of the issues that came from public participation, the comments were generally supportive. There were suggestions that community health workers need to be focused on in terms of the general upskilling of staff, where the health budget is being adjusted. There were substantial discussions around equitable share, and equitable share needs to be the fact that equitable share needs to be understood a little bit better, and also needs to be a little bit more dynamic in terms of adapting to the needs as they are found on the ground. There was huge concern again about the Vaal River system and the pollution that's happening from the Mpumalanga municipality. And there were questions around underspending, what happens in terms of underspending. A lot of the comments that came forward were the fact that, or pointed to the fact that there needs to be more accountability in government, and government needs to ensure that there's value for money for programs that are funded, and where underspending happens as well, there also needs to be accountability and consequence management. The committee themselves resolved that National Treasury should consider reviewing the equitable share formula in favour of local government in view of local government's revenue base being revised downwards and expenditure being revised upwards. They further resolved that National Treasury should ensure that there's value for money in projects that are funded through the national fiscus, and additionally that National Treasury should apply punitive measures for under expenditure, thereby encouraging service delivery. The conclusion, Chairperson, is that the Finance Portfolio Committee supports the principle and detail of the Division of Revenue Amendment Bill 2019. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Ryder. The next one, KZN, Honourable Nir Karim.
Chairperson, you have before you a document that talks about the negotiating mandate. It talks about the portfolio committee. It reads met today, Friday, the 22nd of November, and agreed to mandate the KwaZulu-Natal delegation to support the Division of Revenue Amendment Bill. It comes from the chair, the Honourable Issy Nkosi. There's no attachment to it. I checked with the secretary, one of the two secretaries. And this is what we have. But I did in fact speak to the chairperson and communicated, Wendy was there, she will have something to say, that it was a very good meeting. I haven't been to the legislature for a while. In other roles, you know, I served that purpose. I did that. But I was very impressed with the committee, actually, and particularly its chairperson, for me at least. What was striking about him was the activist orientation he's got, you know. He's not somebody who really leads that committee. He says, no, we've got to do this, we've got to do that, which is very impressive. And they're going around, visiting the municipalities and so on. And much of what I have to say as a politician, he seemed to be very synergistic with. In other words, the operation of that committee is very similar to our two committees, very activist. But as for the issues, what was also impressive, I don't know if this happened and I didn't know this happened like that, but even for the amendments to the Division of Revenue, they had civil society invited. Obviously, because it's the adjustments, it's not the DOR that we get in February, there weren't many people there. There were two, I think one from business and one from an NGO that I know very well, a Built Environment Support Group. So the person raised an issue that we've been dealing with since, I think, 1999. Basically, the view that when we give money from the national fiscus to municipalities, their share of the equitable share, I'm sure Jenkins, Advocate Jenkins, has come across this, or his predecessors anyway. The argument of civil society, or at least one organization, Built Environment Support Group, was that in policy terms, in theory, it's given for municipal services and operational expenses. So it's for free basic services. And the argument of civil society, the old one, it still persists, and it's large, well, in my time when I checked local government, it was significantly true. I don't know enough at the moment. But municipalities don't necessarily use the money for free basic services, or they use only a small, well, not enough of it. They spend it for operational. I remember in the era that I was chairing local government in this parliament, there were claims that it's used for like fancy cell phones and other stuff instead of being for free electricity and water services. And that was a big issue for us and the provincial committee overseeing local government. So that was raised, and they wanted us to make it a conditional grant. Advocate Jenkins, a conditional grant to municipality. You'll be impressed with me, Frank. You know how I replied, like Advocate Jenkins did. So I said, yes, you know, I understand as a politician this has been an old issue, and Wendy was nodding ahead all the time. And it was very worrying, Kumarinche, because like it seemed as if National Treasury and the MP were on the same side. And I had to keep reminding him, no, they're the class enemy, right? I am on your side as a provincial legislature MP. We together against the class enemy. But Wendy was like presenting as if she and I are big buddies. So she was nodding at everything I said. So anyway, this was the answer. I wasted too much time. Okay, so here it is. One, you see, in terms of the constitution, Advocate Jenkins, am I not right? You cannot do that for local government. It has original powers and functions of the constitution. B, they raise, in theory, at least 95% of their own revenue. So you can't dictate to them. C, in the case of provinces, it's a concurrent power and function in the constitution, health and education. And most of the money that goes to the provinces for that actually comes from the national fiscus. They don't raise a substantial amount. Therefore, it can be done for by national government for the equitable shape of provinces, but it cannot be done for local municipalities. Now, furthermore, what we pointed out to them was that there are other ways of dealing with municipal abuse, if such still exists, of the allocation of free basic services. That is, you as civil society must organize, mobilize, petition, engage, negotiate with the municipalities, A. B. The members of the council should hold the executive to account. C. This committee of yours in the province must hold, together with the COCTA committee in the provincial legislature, the department of COCTA and the provincial treasury, hold them there. You get monthly statements from the municipalities. Are you checking how they're using that equitable share? Four or five. Then this committee must hold the municipalities before it. Seven. Go to SELGA and Kwanaloga and ensure they do their job. That's the way. When he pointed out that in the constitution and in the law, it explains clearly, maybe when you were there. So colleagues, this issue came up. It's a good point being made, but it's not doable. Maybe Advocate Jenkins wants to respond to that. I know this issue's been there since 1999, 2000. Make it a conditional grant. Can it be done? According to Wendy, and Wendy agreed with me, Advocate Fanu, she agreed with me. She was there with a guy called Ramusi, who seemed to also agree. That was the one. The other issue they complained about, understandably, is the issue of timing. We explained to them that because the president was in Japan, the MTBBS came only a week late. Thirdly, you know, the other issue that came up, Wendy, there were one or two other issues. I made notes, but I did report to the chair, and then I've got it on my iPad somewhere. And I didn't bring my iPad here, unfortunately. But that one is more or less the issue. It was a very vibrant meeting. People asked very good questions. They're very action-oriented. It was inspiring, I must say. And we did it last week, Tuesday. And the participation by civil society was there. And, you know, they also feel, the usual story, I suppose, that the provincial chair is not enough. And I think we must, you know, really say that National Treasury also handled things very well. Wendy's very experienced, and the new person, Ramusi, was very impressive. So I was quite inspired, as I told you, Comrade Chair, the next day. And finally, they did complain about their delegate to the NCOP. They said that they noticed that I do not bow to the chairperson of the Appropriations Committee 5 times every time I go out and come back in. So I started today, I bowed 3 times.
Thank you, Honorable Karen. Honorable Mulesan, do you remember the discussions that we had on the group, Honorable Ryder? Then the culprit, do you know who is the culprit? So?
Now, I
thought
you did it
in
2016.
Thank you, Honorable Karen. can we request Limpopo, Honorable Sheikh?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and good day to
you. Point of order, can you explain who this is?
It has been explained when we started. Unfortunately, you didn't listen. Thank you.
Yeah, once again, thanks. Honorable Chairperson, you should have started with Limpopo before KZN. That was a very long deliberation, but be that as it may, Honorable Chairperson, I don't think there's a point of order, but Honorable Chairperson, in terms of the negotiating mandate, it is on record, and it's signed by Honorable Pala, who is the Committee Chairperson of Treasury. And the negotiating mandate provincial NCOP permanent delegates to negotiate in favor of the Division of Revenue Amendment Bill B15-2019. However, Chairperson, no major concerns were raised, but I think in terms of stakeholder engagement, there were concerns in terms of the declining fiscus of facing the country as well as the province. However, they were also optimistic that both national and provincial treasury will strive by all means to ensure the country's fiscus is safeguarded and utilized economically. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Sheikh. I think we can all take from you. Straight to the point. Honorable Ryder, can you please do us an honor by reading the mandate from Northern Cape, please?
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, politicians generally enjoy it when they get the chance at the microphone, so I will take my time. Chairperson, thank you very much. I think the submission from the Northern Cape has been sent in. What is concerning is the fact that the public participation was a misfire. So if one considers their report, it says no inputs were received from outside stakeholders, as there were no members of the public who attended the public hearing. This is quite concerning. I think the public hearing, certainly in Gauteng, was well attended. And I think that perhaps needs to be interrogated a little bit, understanding that public participation is in the ambit of the province to coordinate and arrange, and I think we need to find out what happened in that particular province that that caused the public participation not to have any effect. Nonetheless, the committee's inputs on the bill, and I will read, as I wasn't involved. So the committee observes with dismay the huge amount of $74 million that is lost by the province. Money allocated to the Northern Cape is not enough to deliver services in the province. The equitable share formula is not fair to the province. The rural nature and the vast distances travelled needs to be taken into consideration. The province of the Northern Cape is one of the hardest hit by drought, and yet there is no drought relief for the farmers. In the review of the equitable share, cognizance should be taken of the peculiarities of the Northern Cape and how expensive it is to deliver services. The national and provincial treasuries must advise and assist municipalities on how to spend allocated funds as well as conditional grants for their intended purposes. After due deliberation, the Portfolio Committee on Finance, Economic Development and Tourism supports the bill. The committee adopted this negotiating mandate duly signed by the chairperson of the committee, Honourable N. Maneng, and the committee has recommended to the House to mandate permanent delegates to participate in the deliberations at the negotiating stage and to support the bill. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Ryder. Honourable Tweet, Northwest.
Thank you, Chair. I've been supplied with a 16-page document. Will I ever start on page 14? This is with regards to the adoption of the bill. Before I go there, during the meeting it was mentioned that the committee requested in future, if possible, you must be advised what the law and legislation says, that the provinces be consulted before DORA is implemented, basically consulted by National Treasury to discuss the challenges that there are in the province before money is being taken away or moved from different areas. Point 7, adoption of the bill. The four districts in the Northwest Province is in favour of the bill. I'm going to quickly go through recommendations. The committee is in support of the 45.3 million dollar ring fence as a direct grant which requires provinces to transfer funds to the HSRC, National Provincial Treasury. The Treasury have to ensure that the oversight mechanisms are strengthened and municipalities as appropriations as grants are not spent accordingly. The committee adopts but doesn't support of the funds be taken to the national while there is an issue with droughts in the province. Point 4, the committee recommends that stringent reduction directed to the northwest must be debated further. They acknowledge everyone's hard work with regards to the documentation and the participation, adoption of the report. The portfolio committee recommends that the House approve the passing of the Division of Revenue Amendment Bill and mandate the Northwest Permanent Delegate in the National Council of Provinces to vote in support of the Division of Revenue Amendment Bill as tabled by the Minister of Finance. And then there's a swan, well, this was signed by Mr. A. Botswana. I believe that our political view will be given tomorrow, if I'm not mistaken, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Tutuit. Honourable Chad.
Thank you very much, Chair. So listen, as the NCOP delegate on the 21st of November 2019 tabled the Division of Revenue Bill to the Western Cape, and then the committee convened on the 22nd of November. Chairperson, I will, the Western Cape, the Western Cape Committee, the vote of the legislature, Budget Committee reports that it confers on the Western Cape's permanent delegate in the NCOP the authority to abstain from the voting in the bill. The reason for not supporting the bill are attached in the committee report. So, Chairperson, the Western Cape has got seven reasons that the first one is funding should be allocated to address the severe drought in the certain rural areas in the Western Cape. Since a state of emergency was declared, national government has a constitutional obligation to address the issue of safety and security in the province, given the high crime rate due to the lack of funding from national government. The Western Cape has $1 billion of own resources to address an issue that falls outside of the provincial mandate. This should be considered in the bill. Western Cape has the second highest crime, highest rate in immigration in the country. Public services such as education, health, and other forms of service delivery remain under the immense pressure. In order to provide essential public services to the poor, national government should finalize the public service wage bill. National government should review the salaries of the 29,000 senior managers. National government must introduce consequent management. National government should not continue to bail out state-owned enterprises, SOEs, as the expenses of taxpayers and the poor with no consequence for accounting officers who are employed at the SOEs.
7, despite the strong opposition to the NHI, insurance NHI minister continued to find projects related to NHI. These funds should be allocated to addressing the severe drought in the Western Cape instead of whereas to safety and security. Is signed by Advocate D. Bartman, MPP Chairperson Budget Committee. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Njandu. We are now going to the last province where the sun rises, Mpumalanga. The Mpumalanga briefing meeting took place on the 21st as agreed by the committee at the Mpumalanga Legislature in Ndume at 9 o'clock. The members, I think, in the package you have the report and also the letter from the secretary. I'm just going to focus on the observation and findings because on the same day we started with the committee meeting where we dealt with the committee discussion on the bill, and then thereafter there was a public hearing process. So public hearings were also held. So let me start by indicating the observations and findings made by the committee on the public hearing and the committee meeting. The committee raised the concern that there was no progress reported to the province on the development of the Moloto Corridor. When you talk about Moloto Corridor, in simple terms, it's Moloto Rail. And this is what has been happening all the time when permanent members go to the province to consult on this. This is the issue that has been raised. And this time around, it was 5. Because there was a commitment which was done by the former president to assure the community members there, that it will be considered. But members went further to say, when the Presidential Infrastructure Commission started, the expectation that before even the other, you know, this corridor between Durban and Bloemfontein, the Moloto Corridor was there way before we could even start thinking about this. So there was an expectation that it would be part of the infrastructure plan, but it wasn't there. So it's a serious matter to the committee. And I don't know, they said they will do everything to make sure that in the SONA, come 2020, it is announced. And Treasury must make sure that it's announced and it's planned, because the process of the study has been done, money has been spent. Other issues have not been identified here, the issues of PATCO and stuff being the sole mode of transport there as a company, and allegations coming sides, and if we don't do anything about it, or government is not doing anything about it, it will be proven to be correct. The committee also notes with concern that there is no allocation for the upgrading of sanitation in schools. We know the issue of sanitation of schools is not only in Eastern Cape and Limpopo where we had tragedies, but Mpumalanga is also a rural province. There were oral submissions which were considered accordingly, and other submissions that do not talk to the content of the bill in as far as the public hearing. And such submissions will be referred to the Select Committee on Public Participation and Petitions. the provincial departments, local municipalities, and other relevant structures when necessary. You know, when the communities find an opportunity, then they will ventilate and lash out about everything. That is why I always say, when you have to address members about the roads, as national department or provincial department, you don't have, they're not interested in your technical thing to say, no, this is not our responsibility, it's a local government road, this is a district road, this is a national, they don't care about those things. Also, what they want is service. So hence, once they get the opportunity, they raise all those things. Members of the public were anonymously in support of the bill. Hence, the bill has been reported, but with those concerns. Now I go to the recommendations. The committee supports the bill and makes the following recommendations. That National Treasury is requested to indicate how much has been allocated for the development of the Mondobo Corridor over the medium-term expenditure framework period. Because we know it's not something that can be done overnight. But if it was started then, already it would have been finished. The National Treasury must ensure that there is an allocation for the upgrading of sanitation in schools, as observed above. The delegation representing the province of Mpumalanga in the National Council of Provinces is conferred with authority and mandate to vote in favor of the Division of Revenue Amendment Bill B15-2019 with no amendment, taking into account the input and observation noted in this committee report. And in conclusion, honorable members, the chairperson of the committee extended her appreciation to the members of the committee and the permanent member who briefed them and National Treasurer and Provincial Treasurer. I forgot to mention that we were joined by the team from National Treasurer, but also Provincial Treasurer. They were also part of the meeting. Their input and contribution were very helpful, and it helped and made the deliberations and discussions to be very interesting. Thank you very much. I'm done with Mpumalanga. Going back to our agenda items, the honourable members. We are going to item number 4, where National Treasury is. When I started, I said we have sent the mandates and the reports to National Treasury so that when they come to this meeting, they come prepared. Oh, my apologies. Honorable Sheikh has requested to be released. She has her own meeting that she has to start. She's also she's even late. Thank you so much for being available for us. I will now head over to National Treasury to respond on the negotiating mandate from all 9 provinces. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, there's this confusion between Chris and Steve. When I want to speak to Chris, I say Steve. When I want to speak to Steve, I say Chris.
Apologies, Chair. I'm Steve.
My apologies.
With you in Mpumalanga. No, that's fine. I'm here with my boss, Wendy Sano, today, to do our best in trying to respond on the issues that were raised in the recommendation and findings from the provincial mandate. In the interest of time, we'll summarize our responses, but we will provide a written set of responses as well later today. That can be shared with the provincial legislatures. We'll follow the same alphabetical order as the committee. So starting from the Eastern Cape, where the first recommendation related to the provincial road maintenance grant and an allegation that it disadvantages their province, we would emphasize that the allocation model for the that provincial road maintenance grant is not intended to advantage or disadvantage any province. It's intended to measure the road network and fund that the size of the road network, because it's a maintenance grant. So it's intended to measure your network and the traffic volumes on it, on that network, and then fund proportionately to that. And I think the misconception in the Eastern Cape case, they say that it disadvantages them because gravel roads aren't funded in that model, but gravel roads are accounted and funded in that model. But gravel roads, the Eastern Cape is correct that gravel roads are funded at a lower rate than tarred roads, but that's simply because the maintenance costs on gravel roads are lower than those on tarred roads. So I just want to assure the Eastern Cape that funding model is not prejudiced against them. They also raised a concern about the clarification of roles and responsibilities of delivery of water and electricity between local and district municipalities in Eskom. Just to clarify that in the Division of Revenue Bill and the Amendment Bill, the allocations are based on the assigned functions. So in terms of the legal framework, we can only fund the municipality, district or local that is formally assigned in terms of the Municipal Structures Act the power for water. And on the electricity side, we fund based on who is the license holder for new electricity connections, Eskom or the municipality. And so we follow this principle that the funds follow those functional assignments, and the changes in those functional assignments are in terms of other legislation. But we do also, in one of the other provinces, raise this also about Section 29 of the Division of Revenue Act. We do provide in the Act that where a district is funded for a service, but the local municipality is actually providing that service on behalf of the district, that there is a provision for the district to negotiate with and transfer funds to that local municipality. And the other province raised the issue that sometimes that's not adhered to, that process. There is a penalty clause in that, so the Treasury can intervene and force a transfer in certain cases. And I think the query from the other province was, you know, is that happening? And our response on that is that we need to be told of abuses of that. We need to be, you know, that would need to be raised with us either by one of the municipalities or the provincial treasury in that case. Then still with the Eastern Cape, there was a concern there about the INEP reductions, the electrification program reductions, and that reflects some capacity problems of Eskom in the province. We've already, in fact, had a discussion with the Department of Energy on those capacity problems in Eskom. That's correct, and we will. It is receiving attention already, and we will formally refer the concern from the legislature to the Department of Energy so that they can take it up with Eskom. There's also a report that the province submitted to the FFC. We will take that up with the FFC. The report, the Eastern Cape also says that their backlogs in infrastructure aren't taken account in infrastructure allocations. Just to say that the infrastructure allocations do take account of the demand for services at provincial level in the different provinces, and the municipal allocations, especially in the MIG, are based on census data on the extent of backlogs in each municipality. So backlogs are very much a part of the allocation structure for all provinces and municipalities. Of course, there is never enough money to do as much as we would want, right? And so the pace of backlog eradication, partly due to a constrained fiscus, is not what we would want, but also partly due to inefficiencies in the delivery of infrastructure, which, given that we don't have more resources available, our efforts are kind of focused on trying to maximize the impact that we can have with the resources that we do have. Then turning to the Free States, the first recommendation is for a review of the equitable share formula to ensure that it's biased in favor of poor and rural municipalities. We would, of course, observe that already the existing equitable share formula for local government heavily favors poor and rural municipalities because it has this revenue adjustment factor in it, so that the allocations to poor and rural municipalities are more than twice as much
in rand terms per household than for metropolitan municipalities. So there is a strong rural bias already in the formula, but several stakeholders have raised concerns about the structure of the local government fiscal framework, and so the Minister of Finance has proposed that we hold a special budget forum, Lekhotla, to discuss these issues in more depth, and that will include the COGTA stakeholders and SALGA representing local government as well. And that, I think, touches on some of the other recommendations on the need for review of local government equitable share. Then there's the question about the centrality of the Free State province, and this goes, I think it's related also to the Northern Cape, also raised issues around some of their unique cost variables on the provincial side. There is an ongoing review at the moment of the provincial equitable share formula, and as part of that process, all provincial treasuries have been submitting data to the National Treasury on cost drivers in different, in their, unique to their province and also unique to different parts of their province, so that we can see in kind of numbers what the impact of these unique cost drivers and variables are and which sectors they apply to, etc. And so that will be taken forward through that provincial equitable share review process. Then there were at least three provinces that made recommendations related to drought funding, which I think speaks to the seriousness and widespread nature of the ongoing drought situation. It's important to note that this is a prolonged drought, so this is not a new event that we're looking at here. The funding framework here works a little bit differently to regular disasters. So in the case of a flood, it's very simple that, you know, you must immediately release funds to provide temporary shelter for people and kind of assess and repair. But a drought, and the drought that we're in at the moment, has been going on for several years, which means that in this case, a lot of the funding that is for drought, the kind of infrastructure that can assist with drought, additional boreholes, etc., was actually allocated last year. So there are ongoing projects, and you kind of, with drought, you reach a limit where you can't, you know, infrastructure can't fix ongoing drought, and so there's also a lot of emphasis on the need for communities, farmers, etc., to adapt to prolonged drought conditions and to conserve water as best they can. So just to summarize, in last year's budget, we made very, very substantial allocations for drought relief. So before we even came to the adjustments budget, there was 1.56 billion reprioritized within conditional grants, so within existing allocations, particularly in the water and agriculture sector for drought relief. There was a further 1.6 billion in municipal own revenue and provincial own revenues that were also reprioritized towards drought last year. And then in the adjustments bill last year, we had 3 billion rand additional to that. So that's a total of just over 6 billion last year that was provided in various forms of drought relief. So that 3 billion in conditional grants. Now from that 3 billion, which was allocated across 8 of the 9 provinces, it was only Gauteng that didn't receive allocations there. A lot of that funding was not spent by the end of the 18-19 financial year, which is not entirely surprising given that we are, as an adjustments budget, quite close already to the end of the financial year. A 3 billion rand is a lot of money to spend in what's left of the financial year. It's a little bit long. The local government financial year is a little bit longer. So as anticipated, there were quite a few rollover requests for projects that had allocations from last year but that weren't completed in the last financial year and were rolled over into this financial year. This included 428 million in approved rollovers on the Municipal Disaster Recovery Grant, 619 million on the Water Services Infrastructure Grant, 23.5 million on the Regional Bulk Infrastructure Grant, and 154 million on the Agriculture Support Program Grant. So that's over a billion rand in rollovers from last year into this year. So that's ongoing spending in this financial year on drought relief projects, which is why you don't see additional allocations now in this year's adjustment budget. We've also, in the written response, we'll provide a summary of the kind of normal draft disaster funding regime. And it's also, we should note, because the Western Cape recommendation said that there's said something about the state of emergency still being valid. A national disaster was declared last year in April, but in terms of the Disaster Management Act, states of disaster expire after 3 months unless they're renewed. So that national state of disaster is no longer still in effect, just to clarify that in case that's helpful. And then there is also, it's also important to say that in terms of the principles of disaster funding, it's important that in the Disaster Management Act, again, it sets the principle that when a disaster occurs, the first call should be on the relevant sphere to reprioritize within its own budget to accommodate that disaster. You only apply for funding from national government if you kind of exceeded local resources. And there is also, in the Disaster Management Act, requirements for each sphere of government, each department as well, to assess the disaster risks that affect them and to take precautionary measures and to have plans in place. And it also sets out that when national funding is applied for, we should take into account whether prevention and mitigation measures have been taken. So all of these kind of past performance on the spending of draft funds, making sure that you're looking after resources, all of those things are things that we should be taking into account as well. The Free State also had a recommendation on the funding for provinces to conduct interventions in municipalities, and just to say here that funds were actually added in the 1920 provincial equitable share. 19 million rand was added to support that capacity. They also had concerns about the reductions on the INEP and Municipal Systems Improvement Grants. Those reductions were made because underspending was already anticipated, so the reductions themselves won't harm delivery. It's the anticipated underspending that is the problem, and so a kind of similar response to the Eastern Cape, that really relates to problems in the capacity of the implementing agents there. There was a concern raised on the shifting of the NHI grant from indirect to direct. I mean, to emphasize here that the funds there will be used for exactly the same purpose. It's the same amount and the same purpose. It's just a change in who is going to be spending the money, and so it's going to be the province rather than the national department. It's really quite a technical change. They also raised concerns about water catchment, which we will particular areas in the province, which will refer to the Department of Water and Sanitation, and they were the ones that raised the issue around the Section 29, which we spoke to under the Eastern Cape point. Then turning to Gauteng's recommendations, they recommended that National Treasury should consider reviewing the equitable share formula in favour of local government, in view of local government's revenue base being revised downwards. Just to clarify here, because it refers to reviewing the equitable share formula in favour of local government, that a formula is used to allocate the equitable share of each sphere among the municipalities and among the provinces, but there is no formula between the three spheres. So the allocation to national, provincial and local government, those are determined through the budget process, which includes consultation with provinces and local government through the Budget Council and Budget Forum, respectively. And I think this is also important to emphasize in the case of the Northwest's concern about the consultation ahead of the Division of Revenue Bill being tabled, that in fact the MEC from the Northwest, all MECs are part of both of the Budget Council and the Budget Forum, and the Treasury officials are also consulted through the Technical Committee on Finance. So there is extensive consultation with provincial stakeholders within the executive branch before these bills are tabled, before the budget is tabled. So the division of revenue similarly is discussed at both the Budget Council and the Budget Forum, and then in Cabinet it's approved in Cabinet before it is, the draft is tabled in the medium-term budget policy statement for the legislature to comment on at that stage, and then obviously it's tabled again formally in the Division of Revenue Bill in February of the next year. The allocations between the three spheres are largely determined by the functions performed by those three spheres. So because the provision of free health and education services is so much more expensive than the provision of free water and sanitation, provinces get a larger share than local government. Local government, of course, also has substantial own revenues, including over 60 billion rands in property rates, which is a substantial own revenue tax. I mean, it's comparable to some of the taxes that national government collects, but of course recognizing that the ability of municipalities in different parts of the country to collect that revenue is very different because of skewed economic distribution, and as a result we talk to that redistributive nature of the division of revenue allocations and the equitable share that allocates so much more per poor household in rural municipalities than in urban municipalities. Again, even though in spite of that overall context, we are aware of and acknowledge the concerns about local government funding that have been raised by many stakeholders, hence the Minister's proposal for a local government budget forum, Lekgotla, to consider the framework further. There's a recommendation that National Treasury should ensure value for money on projects funded through the fiscus. Obviously, we agree with that recommendation wholeheartedly, and we also outline how the Division of Revenue Act sets out an accountability framework for the effective spending of funds allocated through the Division of Revenue Act, including the responsibilities also of the accounting officers in the recipient departments and provincial departments and municipalities, as well as the account responsibilities of the transferring officers within national departments in the case of conditional grants. Kateng lastly recommended that Treasury should apply punitive measures for under-expenditure, thereby encouraging service delivery. We note that recommendation, and in fact we've said in the medium-term budget policy statement that past performance, both in terms of spending levels and service delivery performance, are one of the factors that we've considered in determining how much of a reduction to make to individual conditional grants as part of the fiscal consolidation strategy. However, we also note that we do need to balance the consequences of those reductions, of those kind of punitive reductions, with a need to account for the possibility of improved performance in future and ensuring that there is still equity in the system. So we wouldn't want to just reduce. I think a reductions-only strategy on underperformance is not going to ever solve the problems of underperformance. Mpumalanga, let me respond to that, and then I'll ask Wendy to take over. And I'm sure you're tired of my voice. On the Maloto corridor, we have the chair is correct that the rail proposal. A formal study, a feasibility study, was conducted in 2014-15, and the report found, I'm just going to read an extract from the conclusion, that while the feasibility study provides a compelling case for further interventions to improve transport infrastructure and services along the Maloto corridor, it assumes a considerably higher level of budget contribution than is likely to be affordable. It focuses on transport solutions and neglects broader settlement and development challenges of the region, without which the envisaged transport investments will not yield the value in terms value for money. The National Treasury is therefore obliged to conclude that the proposed Maloto Corridor Railway project is unaffordable and unlikely to yield the social, economic, and development dividends that would warrant an investment of this scale and magnitude. However, I think the key point to note there is the compelling case for further investments along that route and along that corridor, which is why over the period, it's a little bit longer than the MTEP, from 2019-20 to 2022-23, so a four-year period there, SANRAL plans to invest 4.5 billion rand on improved road infrastructure along that network. So, I mean, that we call it a road upgrading, but it's really far more substantive than that. It's a complete rebuilding of the road. So it will become a dual carriageway freeway along most of that section. It also includes the upgrading of access roads from gravel to tar. So it will really be a complete transformation of the road capacity in that region, and that does stretch across three provinces and five municipalities. And then in terms of the upgrading of sanitation, it's not the same road but repaired. It is a highway that will be much safer and it is an affordable and sustainable solution and can be implemented over a four-year period, whereas the railway would lose money perpetually and would take a much longer time to implement. Then with regard to the upgrading of sanitation in schools, to reassure, firstly to give the context that over the MTEP there is a total of 3.4 billion rand on school sanitation nationwide, that's complemented by private sector donations as well, through the School Infrastructure Backlog Grant Program and the Department of Basic Education inform us that they are on track to eradicate the remaining 3,898 pit latrines in schools over that three-year period, which allays some of the concerns. I think the Eastern Cape MEPs, one of the MEPs had said that it would take 100 years. The DBE is on track to do it in 3 years, they assure us. The project, the work funds reduced from the Northwest and Mpumalanga in year, from planned expenditure because of delays of projects in those particular provinces, but I just want to reassure those two provinces that that doesn't mean that those projects have been cancelled. It just means that they've been delayed, and so the allocation for those projects will appear in the 2020 MTEP allocation. Thank you. Let's hand over to Wendy.
It's now good afternoon. I'll take the Northern Cape and the rest. With regard to the Northern Cape, the concern was raised with regard to the reduction of 74 million, and that refers to reduction in the regional bulk infrastructure grant, although there's been increases to the province overall of 25.1 million in direct transfers. But what is important is also to note the reasons why that amount was reduced, because that will also give the province the understanding of where the delays are coming from. The first one is coming from the project cannot really be proceeded with because the David Craper local municipality is failing to agree to sign the co-funding agreement for that project. And therefore, for the Upington wastewater treatment works. So that is accounting for about half the deduction that's made in the allocation. So, I mean, what is quite important with the regional bulk infrastructure grant, and to put that into context, why is it not just fully grant funded, and why is there co-funding required? A bulk project or regional bulk doesn't just serve a small group of people, it serves a large group of customers. So it will serve poor customers, and it will serve businesses, and it will serve households that can pay for services. So the co-funding part that the municipality should contribute towards are for those consumers that can actually afford to pay for the services. And government picks up the social component, and so you can see why the project has been delayed, because in the end, government cannot fund the rich out of these type of projects. And then there's also another two projects that have been delayed, and the reason is that the readiness reports are not ready yet. And again, like Stephen pointed out, just because the money is reduced this year doesn't mean that the money when the project are ready, those will not be funded in future years. So those are the reasons for the delay in the Northern Cape project. Then there's two issues raised about the equitable share, and Stephen has already touched on the provincial equitable share formula review. But then the issue about ruralness, there's also a specific issue that I just would like to highlight, is that there is currently a component in the equitable share formula that favours the smaller and more rural provinces, and that's referred to as the institutional component. The institutional component weighs 5% in the formula, and it means that despite your size, never mind what your size is, every municipality gets, every province gets 11.1% of that 5%, because it's divided between the 9 provinces. And if you look at the Northern Cape, in all the components, there are 6 components, so out of the 5 components, they get anything of 2.1% to 2.3%. But in the institutional component, because it weighs 11.1%, and you look at the overall weighted share that the Northern Cape gets, it goes up to 2.6%. And that is the institutional component that's pushing it up. And it acknowledges that it doesn't matter what the size of a province is, you need to run a basic administration, you need to perform basic functions, and that is why every province gets the same allocation. So that's just another thing to keep in mind. Then the draft response, Stephen sort of dealt with in detail. And then the issue about provincial treasuries and national treasuries must provide support and assistance to municipalities to prepare the budget. And firstly, we do quite a bit, actually, and we try to do even more. We do what we call the guidelines that we give to municipalities. We've got on our website also tools to assist municipalities to prepare budgets. But we also physically meet with the municipalities concerned when they prepare their budgets, and we give them advice. And after we've had what we call the benchmark meetings, we also meet with the municipalities concerned. But it's very important to note that the only thing that we can do is provide advice and guidance. And some municipalities will take that advice and guidance and take it into account when they do their budgets that they submit to council. But it's the municipal council that actually makes that decision. And sometimes they ignore our advice. That's why sometimes National Treasury also just considers taking drastic action, like delaying equitable share allocations if budgets are not corrected, because it's quite sad. If you prepare budgets where you underestimate your expenditure and you over-project your revenue, because in the end of the day, what it means, if you do your normal budget like that, you'll go bankrupt. And in the end of the day, if a municipality hasn't got money, it can't provide services. So it's really something that it's quite serious. But it's National Treasury and Provincial Treasuries are acknowledging that there's really much more that we can do, and we're strengthening our support quite dramatically. And maybe what was quite useful for this committee as well, maybe if you're interested, that we can if invited, make a presentation on some of the initiatives that's in place to strengthen our support as well as our interventions in terms of municipalities, because municipalities are key to service delivery. And then with regard to Northwest, they appreciated that money be ring-fenced towards the study that HSRC is going to undertake, and it is a critical study given that it will enhance how we target government programs in the future in respect of agriculture. And then, again, the issue is mentioned about supporting municipalities in terms of oversight mechanisms. It's similar to a response given to Northern Cape. The draft issue, again, it's Stephen dealt with that in quite a bit of detail in terms of Free State. And then the issue about also reduction to the allocations in Northwest must be further debated. And again, if you actually look at the allocations, there's actually, if you balance them all off, it's actually a net increase, because there's a net increase to the province of 18.3 million. There's also to local government an increase of 17.4 million. And the only grant that's been reduced of an amount of 1.4 million is in the Municipal Systems Improvement Grant, that's an indirect grant. Maybe what is quite important is also just to link it to future work that's being done. Currently the concern is that we're ploughing in about 2 billion rand per annum in capacity support to municipalities. But if you look at do we see improved service delivery and improved performance, and the answer is most probably what we're currently busy with is also, we've just started with the process, is to review the whole capacity support program and support that's given to municipalities to look at ways and means of how we can improve it. And what we'll be doing is in future division of revenue briefings, we'll also update the committee on progress that we're making there. Then with regard to the Western Cape, the drought issue, Stephen's already dealt with that issue. Then the issue about providing safety and security services because there's high crime in Western Cape, and that the province is actually raising its own money in terms of assisting the national mandate. That's not an issue for the Division of Revenue Bill. It deals with an issue that's a national mandate. Policing is a national mandate. And if you can provide any advice, this is an issue that should be raised then during the appropriation bill hearings. It's not a Division of Revenue Bill issue. Then the issue about immigration and how it impacts on the allocations to the province, and this because of the increased service delivery and demand, and it applies to all other provinces as well. Every year we get information from Stats-SA, and it's updated on a yearly basis. It's called the mid-year population estimates. And Stats-SA has got quite a comprehensive system in terms of monitoring people movement. And they will monitor who's moving from one province into another province and also out of a province. And that's all netted against each other. So it is the data will take into account if a province receives any additional people from another province, it will take it into account. And if you look even at the provincial equitable share formula, it doesn't, in certain criteria, for example, looking at health provision, it wouldn't look at whether you're a South African citizen or not. They will just look at whether you visited the clinic or whether you visited the hospital. So it does try to track service delivery demands in a specific province. Then the next one has got to do with the wage bill. The wage bill is subject to collective bargaining, and the current collective bargaining is in place from 2018-19 until 2020-21. So what will be happening from next year is that process will be opened up for the next wage negotiation process. And what is also quite important to note, there are structures in terms of which provinces then participate in that process express their views as well. So it impacts on all provinces and national governments. And then the issue was raised, and it was quite prominent in the 2019 MTPPS, the 29,000 senior managers that earn over R1 million per annum. And what is also quite important, and we will indicate it in our written response as well, is that if you look at who are the beneficiaries of that R1 million, about half of them fall within what we refer to as doctors or medical professionals. And earning R1 million for medical or doctor is really not, cannot be seen as an excessive salary at all. What we've got in the MTPPS, there's also an annexure that provides down the police and judges and lawyers and doctors and non-OSDs. so it actually puts into perspective exactly who falls within that 29,000 public sector employees that earn over R1 million. Then national government must introduce consequence management, and you know, it's always nice if everyone thinks national treasury is all powerful, but unfortunately we're not. So if anything goes wrong in a department, if something goes wrong in a department, national treasury must assist or do the consequence management. But if something goes wrong in a national department, it is the head of that national department that should take the corrective action. If that head of the department does not take the necessary corrective action, it must then go to the minister to take the corrective action. Of course, National Treasury is very interested in that process, and so if a conditional grant, for example, is incorrectly spent, it is the responsibility of that national department that's administering that grant to actually take the corrective action, not national treasury. Then with regard to the bailout of state and enterprises, it is not a division of revenue bill-related issue. And then with regard to the national health insurance, and it's indicating that there's strong opposition, and the money must be directed towards the Western Cape for safety and security projects as well as the drugs. Of course, allocating money and just allocating it to another province would seem as very inequitable. But what is actually also quite important is that the NHI issue should also not be taken out of context. It's very important that we focus also on the benefits of what the program is trying to achieve. It's trying to achieve universal access, and currently in the preparatory stages, which is all intended to improve health provision. So it doesn't really matter what your views are about NHI per se. It should be supported, of course. But all these initiatives are all to enhance and improve health provision in the end of the day. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Wendy and Stephen. You saw correctly that I was disappointed. And I don't want us to think that we don't understand our mandate and what we are talking about. That Moloto Road is a mandate of Department of Transport. And as much as Treasury is involved in the funding and all that, it's also our mandate as Appropriation Committee, because that money needs to be appropriated. And I want to correct you, Stephen. You might have joined Treasury later. The issue of Moloto Road did not start in 2014, because 2014 I was here. It even started before I became a member of the provincial legislature. By that time, I think the MEC for transport, it was Honorable Mashalele, way back. And I'm asking myself, when did Treasury realize that it's too expensive? It's too expensive for who? Because you go to Moloto Road now, you won't find less than two buses stuck or late. People are losing their jobs because they arrive late or they are unable to get to their destination. It's not like people are not appreciating what you're doing. I was there when the decision was taken that Moloto Road is now going to be handed over to the National Department of Transport to be a national department, because I was honoring them. But that is not the solution. And I've always said, it's about time, and it has always been like that. governments must listen to what people say. The need of the people must dictate and determine the agenda of the government. And not government going to the people to say, this is what we are going to do for you. Hence we have IDPs in the municipalities. This is not going to help you. So, it's expensive. The Moloto rail is too expensive for those people who are in the bundus where we are. You can't even decide or try by all means to get funds somewhere or to make it a multi-year project so that you can cater for those people for what they want, because it's going to be cheaper for them to travel and safer. You can expand it, you can make it a two-way. It's not going to help. Just go to Moloto Road and see. When I go home Friday or Saturday, I'm traveling there. Now that I came here yesterday, I traveled there. When I go to town, I must travel there. Whatever I do when I go to town, I'm going to Pretoria, I'm going to Johannesburg. That's where I travel. When Honorable Minister Giga, Mbalula went there to open another phase of the project, the meeting didn't went well. And it is not, and the people thought he came there because there was an accident, because there was an accident before, a week before. But he has committed and announced that they are going to open that phase 2 weeks before. Unfortunately, the following week there was an accident. And after that, when I was in the legislature, I got a report that the very same morning on the 21st, there was an accident. And on the 20th, in the evening, there was an accident. And those accidents, they don't only give a burden to the families, the road accident fund and everybody, but also to the health sector. Because that hospital cannot deal with the amount of accidents that are caused there. So, the project is too expensive, or is more expensive than the lives of the people. That would be the question that I'll ask to Treasurer. The vote of those people is not expensive, but when they have to get the services are expensive. No. As a permanent member, a permanent delegate from Mpumalanga, I'm saying no, I'm dismissing your response with the content itself. In 2017, there was 4.5 billion which was given to Sandra. What happened to that? How far are we with that? And I still insist, I still repeat, former President Zuma came to Kwaggafontein and committed to say, over and above what we are doing in as far as expanding the road, we are still committed to continue with the rail. How much do you think those people who are working, going to Maraba start to sell food and stuff and stuff, they add to can afford the bus, which is not reliable, or to can afford the taxes? Because if tax goes up, fuel goes up, the price also increases. Maybe I must consult with my chair here. Find a way of getting those people from the bundus there to come here so that you see them. And if you can just make a research go to 1986, what happened there? Bayayimele indaba yami. I'm not insinuating anything, but don't. As government, we've made a promise and we must keep to that promise. I, for one, being one of them, I can't stand there and tell them that Treasury is saying or as government is saying is too expensive. When have you realized that it's expensive? It's expensive for who? Is PATCO not expensive for us? I'm not taking it. And I'm telling you, those people there, go to go to the kings and the chiefs. They want the rain and nothing else. You can give whatever you give, but the rain is a necessity. They are also important because their votes are important. How do we expect us to go there and say the former president came here and promised and now we're still going to ask them to vote, to participate in the democratic process while we keep on promising them? No. Don't make life difficult for us. Find a way. And for us as public reps, we are not safe under such circumstances. Our families are not safe under such circumstances. You make a commitment, you keep to your commitment. That's the government that we know. That's the government that they voted for. And not this spinning that I see. It can't be tolerated. The people of Limpopo, Mpumalanga, Zeyes Mroka, and Tembisile and Gauteng, they need rain over and above what you think you can afford. Honorable members, you can now comment on the issues. Honorable Detroit, Honorable Melisani, Honorable Raida, Honorable Kai, and my chair.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I first want to ask for your indulgence. I am currently dealing with an emergency in the province as well, so I'll be brief and in and out, if you'd excuse me. My issue is the drought. Listen to what the gentleman said, that the farmers and the communities must adapt. And I also heard him say that national state of disaster expire after 3 months and then it must be declared again. We've got a national state of disaster that has been prolonged and going on for more than 6 to 8 years. So one would have thought that government would have seen the need that there is in the country. In spite of that, the infrastructure grants are being taken away from municipalities. There's no consequent management in those municipalities. So the water resources are being spilled. The water purification systems are not working. We're looking at pollution in the rivers, boreholes, and yet farmers and communities are asked to adapt. We're not asking for a miracle. We're asking for funds to be availed and those funds to be distributed accordingly. I've put questions to the minister myself requesting a breakdown of how funds for drought relief has been distributed, as well as the breakdown on the transport factor on that. Up to now, I haven't been supplied with that. The MEC of Finance in the Northwest Province last week alluded that there's no drought allocation because no plans were handed in by the Department of Agriculture in the MEC's offices. That's troublesome. The rural communities and the communities in Northwest Province are dependent on agriculture for survival. I'm getting a little bit emotional because I've seen firsthand, I know what it feels
to stare into the eyes of an animal that's dying and to look into the eyes of someone that's supposed to look after those animals. I know what a hungry person looks like, and yet the farmers and communities must adapt. I think the time has come for government to put its foot down. Instead of just throwing money at problems, which does exist, to go further than that, to see to it that people get arrested, because people are dying. As we speak, people are contemplating suicide in this country because of drought, because they cannot provide for the animals, because they cannot provide for their own people, for their workers, for their families, and yet we must adapt. I'm not directing to the two of you. I want government to realize what they are really doing to the people of this country. And it seems that if they do not recognize the problems. Chair, I'm going to leave it at that. I'll be back in a bit.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Kress, he didn't speak to the issue of the inputs where the state was talking about the improvement of the integrated national electrification program grant. Number two, they made an input because of the centralization of the province. Now that most of the travelers, whenever they go to other provinces, they go via the state. They made an input of requesting at least an extra funding so that they can be able to bear with the expenses of maintaining those roads, because their roads are overused. So everybody is going via the state wherever you go. So I didn't hear Mr. Chris commenting about that, or maybe let me not be direct to say the Treasurer didn't comment about that, to say whether it is feasible or not. They were just quiet about it, to say whether it is possible or it is not possible, or they will go and look into that. But really this is causing a lot of death during, especially now that we are going towards the festive season. Those bad roads are contributing a lot, and the idea of the government is to reduce the high rate of accidents. So that is why the Free State is doing this request, because it wants to assist in terms of reducing the accidents that are taking place. So they are trying their level best, but because of it is too much burden to them, that's why they are requesting to say that because of their centralism, why can they be maybe considered to get that extra funding? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Mulatani. You are making the same mistake with Mr. Stevens. Stephen Kenya.
My apologies. The person is not misleading me in the name now.
I corrected this with Stephen.
No, I accepted.
The reason why we keep this thing is because he's so traumatized.
Okay, Honourable Ryder.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will be brief. I've been covered to some degree. I just want to talk about this equitable share issue that has come up repeatedly. It's clear that equitable share is firstly not well understood, and we saw that in Selga's presentation to us. They don't understand equitable share. The provinces appear also to not have a good handle on it and are not aware of how it is distributed. I know myself I don't understand it either. So I think that some awareness needs to be driven, certainly, and I believe that the discussion that's going to be held about how to redirect and redefine equitable share also needs to have input from the NCOP. So certainly I would like to ask for an invitation or to be accommodated at that discussion, And I would recommend, Chair, perhaps the whole committee should be included, and obviously that's up to the committee to decide if they want to do that. But I think that it will be an important way of shaping how things go forward in the future, because of course everyone believes that their situation is the worst, and everyone believes that they've got the toughest deal. You know, so yes, the Northern Cape has got the biggest geographical space. Gauteng is small geographically, but we've got the highest competition for scarce human resources, and we need to pay up for human resources, etc., and certainly when it comes to contractors and so on, who would rather work for the big metros than the little outlying. So all of these different factors need to be balanced, and I think our involvement with that would be most appreciated. That's the one. There were comments about underspending. I just want to mention as well, although it's incredibly rare in government, there is also a thing called good underspending. Okay. I'm not sure if it's ever happened in South African government post-1994, but good underspending means that you're using your resources well and you're generating savings. So we must be cautious that we don't fit or put in a one-size-fits-all approach on that as well. I also was interested with the comments about the salaries over 1 million. I think perhaps Treasury needs to take note that it was the Minister of Finance that first raised that matter, so don't tell us about the reasons, perhaps tell him first, and then he can come in and tell us what he's discovered subsequent to that. I'll leave it at that, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Honourable Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. Honourable Chairperson, let me first indicate that this is the first time I'm attending this meeting, so you'll also forgive me for asking irrelevant questions. I think the new person, I would first check whether we will be having these responses in writing, and also in terms of the process, because I know that, understand that the province is supposed to also submit final mandates, whether they will be having these responses when they consider their final mandates. And also in terms of the process, I understand that there's supposed to be meetings of provinces between now and perhaps before 12 tomorrow, because I understand that there's a meeting at 12 to consider tomorrow at 1. At 12 tomorrow, yeah, that's what I was seeing. To consider the final mandate. I was just thinking the possibility then of having provincial meetings between now and 12 tomorrow. I just want to, on this issue of Molotolo corridor, I was just thinking whether we shouldn't rather have a joint committee meeting between the committee that you chair and also the committee that is chaired by Honorable Karim, as well as the select committee that is responsible for transport, Honorable Kenny Moima, and that the ministers of both departments be present. I know that you're frustrated by that. Sometimes when you vent to the officials who are not decision makers, I don't think it will assist us at all. So the politicians that are responsible should be called together to account on the commitments that were made with regard to this call. So I wanted to make that proposal that we should find a date, perhaps even if it's next week, because I know next week most committees may not, or yeah, this committee will meet, but most committees, including transport, won't be meeting until the plenary session on the 6th. So if we could find a date for next week to invite Minister Tito Mboweni and Minister Malula on this particular issue. Just questions on the issue of the review of provincial equitable chair, also perhaps following up on the points that are raised by Honourable Ryder. What is the meaning of this? Because I understand with regard to the formula of the allocation, provinces are getting 43%. This review, is it going to interfere with that percentage? Or my understanding is also with regard to the draft trust relief fund, I'm also surprised that my province never raised anything with regard to this, because it is now mostly the Eastern Cape affected, the Amatole, as well as the area of Rafrain that is affected. But you're talking about the allocation that was made last year. Is this amount still enough to accommodate the current situation in areas such as the Amatole district municipality, as well as the Sarapatman district municipality, which are adversely affected by this drought? You said something about a particular municipality. I just couldn't pick up the name of the municipality in the Northern Cape, where there's been no signing on the issue of co-funding. So what is the situation now? So does that mean there's nothing that is happening with regard to this particular project because the municipality is not signing? What is the way forward now that there's no signing with regard to the co-funding? The next point that I want to raise is this eradication of sanitation backlog, particularly in my province. So you say that the province says it will take about 100 years to eradicate, but the department says it's 3 years. So I just want to check in terms of the progress, so that we monitor whether this is taking place within 100 years or 3 years. What is the progress with regard to these 3 years? When does these 3 years start? And also, if you could get a progress report with regard to the implementation of the eradication program. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Karen.
I mean, I entirely agree with the proposal that we bring together this committee and the transport committee. Because, I mean, effectively, the Appropriations and Finance Committee are the same members. It's an appropriations matter. But, you know, the important thing also, I think, is to communicate to Treasury that we are not popular. They're acutely aware of the constraints on the budget. But the chairperson has set out quite a strong argument. Even if you strip it of its emotional content, there's a lot of substance, I think, in what the chairperson said. This project's been there forever. And we can't renege on it, really. I think she's absolutely right. So there are ways forward. For example, one is we spread it over more years. In other words, you know, if we haven't got the money immediately, it's fatalistic to say, well, it's too expensive. Too expensive against what, as the chair rightly said. Yes, it's true at the time it was proposed, we were in a much healthier financial situation. And obviously, like other projects too, we can't like eliminate all projects. We're going to prioritize, and we can then say instead of a 3-year cycle, let's do it over 5 or 6 years. I entirely agree. The two officials here, maybe in their private capacity, support what you say, Chairperson. But they don't have a mandate. I don't know why my brother is laughing, but they are getting battered. But it's fine. I know you're sub-director at you too, right? Anyway, Wendy, I know you for so long, if they batter you, even my chairperson here, I'll come to your defense. But the thing is, I'm sorry, my friend, I don't know you that well, but I'm sure you're also very hardworking, like Wendy is, and so is so. So the next thing is, I think that, you know, the proposal of getting a meeting, whether it's feasible for next week or not, I can't say. I think it's unlikely, but the point is that we prepare for the budget and the division of revenue. The point is also that we need to win over Sir Peter Mashlangu and that committee on the NA side. Because it carries more weight from the check if we get the NA committee supported, because there's a propensity for politicians, the minister and deputy minister and the GG, to think, well, what the NCOP has to say. Because they represent the provinces, so, you know, what do you expect? They're going to batter us because we're not giving enough money to the provinces. Then they will link it to the chairperson where she comes from. So I think what we should do is persuade the National Assembly Committee in its report. Well, we do a joint report, but lobby them before the February. And they must raise it in the in their speeches in the House there. Nothing stops them from raising in that House, even though it's a provincial matter, so to speak. Then the next point is that an option might also be to meet with the provincial legislature committees, the two committees, and for a small multi-party delegation to go there early in the next quarter and meet with the communities as well. So it's a way of like mobilizing. But I don't think one should expect an immediate turnaround. But you know, we should have a strategy for like, strictly speaking, for the MTBPS next year as a part of the following year. They're not going to win this thing easily in the current climate. So we need a strategic approach. I think, you know, these are things we have to think about. So we need to communicate to this minister in particular. We are no more populist than he is, actually. We see things from a different vantage point, as is inevitable, Chairperson. If you are the minister, you will also say some, hopefully not many, of the things this current minister says, right? And if he were chairing your role, he would say similar things. It's a function of the role you play. So, the next thing is, you know, the thing about over 1 million, I agree with Dennis, and in fact, when the minister said that, it did strike me. I mean, I know from my own experience, a lot of my friends are doctors in the public sector. They are, to use the word, passport, right? They want help. They can earn far more in the private sector. I mean, these are ENT guys, and they are cardiologists, and, you know, they're those sort of people. And they are fed up entities with the public sector. But what keeps them there is their devotion to the people. Even not anymore to the party that they all voted for in 1994. I don't want to tell you where they are from the chair now. So the point is that, it's wrong. The way the minister said it was like a blanket thing. Whereas not everybody earning over a million grand. Let's start with our feeling. How many of us really perform, even an 8-hour day? See, politicians mustn't open their mouths about public service without us also. Right? Some of us have been raising this thing. We need a performance management system, not by party, but by the Speaker and the House Chair, for us. Let's show that we also earn our keep, so to speak. Then on the ground, better, my friend. Friends, we hear what you say, but we need to be proactive as well. Right now, I know what's going to happen for my province, right, from the team. You can imagine now how they're going to eat it up here. Black farm is going to eat it up, right? So, firstly, I think that you can see four tornadoes now, right? Now, we have to think through how we allocate funding via the provinces for cloud relief and so on, right? And climate change is here to stay, regrettably, right? So what I'm saying is, you see, on the matter of the drought, I mean, I agree with many things that Fanny Chitoy said, but I think, I won't agree with him, Comrade Chair, to the extent, it's an emphasis, where he almost implies government is insensitive and uncaring. There's an element of that, party, but I think many things beyond our control. I mean, apart from the huge losses that farmers are suffering, and the consequences of the country, it's also the humane side of it. Meaning, you know, many of us are not, I agree with him, Kovici, many of us are not farmers, we don't have a farming sensibility. When you see images of it, you read novels and so on. The pain and hurt that farmers experience, not just a loss of income, it's also a personal loss. They see their cattle and so on. Well, many of us come from traditional communities. Many of you know far more than I about what it means to farmers, whether it's white or black or whatever. So, I mean, we empathize, but I think it's been too harsh. There's an undertone there almost as if it's all attributable to government's insensitivity and uncaringness. If the government is responsible, it is mismanagement, it is lack of a strategy, it is the failure to manage our money as a whole, let alone the agricultural allocations properly. But I don't think, you know, I think people are aware that things are bad. And there's no sign from Richie. I'm not a climate change expert. There's no light at the end of the tunnel yet. If it's not a drought, it's a flood. This is where we are. So, you know, I don't know what Treasury, nobody batters you. And I'm very empathetic to the two of you. And Treasury as a whole for us, you know. It's a big problem from Richie. That's all I want to say. So I agree with you, Fanny, but also I think you're going too far. But we can agree to disagree.
Thank you, honourable members. Can I hand over again to you, Treasurer? Please just be economic with time. Come around.
Thank you, Chair, for the opportunity. I think I won't comment further on the Moloto issue. I think we have a way forward on that. To say on the drought issue, apologies if I came across the wrong way in implying that it's the responsibility of individuals to adapt for the whole crisis and that government is not being supportive. Government is being supportive in the situation, but in an ongoing drought, as Honourable Karim highlights, and especially in a context of climate change where drought is going to be more regular and more prolonged, what we're saying is that the solutions that we have to include adaptation to that changing reality, that there are going to be areas where certain practices and consumption levels of water were possible in the past that aren't possible at present. That's the type of adaptation that we are talking to. From our side in the Treasury, and I think it's important to say what we can and can't respond to here, we from the Treasury side on drought relief and on other disasters, we can only respond to applications that we receive. So to the extent that we have not received applications from certain areas, we can't approve funding in those areas that we haven't received applications for. It is, you know, we're not the experts on agricultural projects, on farming conditions in different parts of the country. We rely on the provincial departments of agriculture, the Department of Water and Sanitation, on domestic water and commercial water use, to come to us with those assessments and those applications. Those are the ones that are continuing to spend from the rolled over funds from last year, and that's why we're not, in other words, the reason that there aren't more allocations in this year is that there haven't been applications for those. With regards to the questions from the Free State that I didn't respond to, apologies on the INEP one. I think I was a little unsure what exactly the province was proposing here. They said that the INEP and the Municipal Systems Improvement Grant must be reviewed as they have a negative impact, negative bearing on municipalities. What we were trying to explain here is that the reductions that have been made on those grants are due to anticipated underspending. So it's not the reductions themselves are not going to have the negative impact, which I think is what the member was saying as well, if I'm not mistaken, that it's problems within those programs that are leading to that underspending that is the real problem and the capacity. And as was highlighted in the Eastern Cape recommendation, that concern about the implementation of INEP ESCOM projects needs to be referred to the Department of Energy, who oversees that program with ESCOM, and that is our intention, is to take that up with them. And we have already, in fact, been in discussions with them about some of the capacity challenges in the implementation of that program. On the issue with the central location of the Free State province, similar to what we were responding on the Northern Cape vastness, right? There are unique cost-driving factors in each province, and the provincial equitable share is the main funding instrument for provinces. And so in the review of that provincial equitable share, we've asked all provincial treasuries to submit to us data on what those additional cost factors are. So the travel distances and costs associated with that in the Northern Cape, for example, or if there are higher costs in Free State Health because of a higher accident rate, because of travel across the province, for example, that is something that the provincial treasury can raise with us through that process, and that would be the appropriate way, so that we're not making ad hoc decisions that favour one province on one particular issue, but we have a central process through which these kind of unique cost drivers from each province can be raised and brought together and responded to in a kind of a coherent way. I'm going to hand over to Wendy, but I think on the drought issue in the Eastern Cape, yes, there are funds in those in the Eastern Cape that have been rolled over and are still being spent there. Again, the Eastern Cape has a particular the drought is. I'm aware of how acute the drought is. Put it that way. And I'm, you know, we will have to engage further with the province on the adequacy of the existing funds. But at this stage, we have not received from the Provincial Disaster Management Centre a request for additional funding. So that, you know, you can assume what you want from that. But that's the situation we're at the moment. And then just on the co-funding issue, that was you were presenting, so let me hand over to you.
Okay, just with regard to the good under expenditure, that's so true. I mean, to give an example of one good case is where you had cheaper vaccines and then you could actually purchase more for less. So there are examples in government where there's been better expenditure and savings. Then will the provincial equitable share formula review change to 43%? No, it will not. The review is on the horizontal division between provinces, so it deals with the equity among the nine provinces. It's not necessary a bid to get more money into the provincial sphere. That's a political decision, and it's also taking into account the priorities within the respective spheres and also the availability of funding. And with regard to the Northern Cape issue, I mean, what we can do is we can follow up or ask the Department of Water and Sanitation or the New Name Human Settlements and Water and Sanitation to also just do a follow-up with the municipality concerns, and then we can see whether there's, you know, what are the deadlocks and what are the causes of the co-funding agreement not being signed. And then the issue about the sanitation 100 years versus 3 years, we could, I mean, we've got the assurance of the Department of Basic Education that they will be delivering it. And maybe what is the good news here on the indirect grant, because this is funded through the indirect grant to deal with backlogs in schools and also sanitation. In the beginning years, they struggled to spend, but if you look at current expenditure, it's really improved quite a lot. So there's definitely an improvement in spending. So the signs are there that there's definitely not going to wait 100 years. And then maybe just to add to the point that Stephen also made with regard to the disaster and that National Treasury is actually active in this regard because we're waiting for applications to come in. And that is where the committee can also play a role because it is sometimes we're aware of disasters that's taken place but we just don't receive the applications.
Thank you, Treasurer. Members, are we fine with the responses and the proposals that you have made on the way forward? On how best can we deal with the situation? Honourable Rider.
Just one thing I wanted to highlight and mention from that Northern Cape issue is the issue around public participation, and I realise it hasn't been mentioned in any of the discussions, but I do think that there needs to be some sort of follow-up with the province to deal with that issue. Thank you.
Honourable Njandu, and then Honourable Khai.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think also on the issue of the public hearing, I think it's also a matter that needs to be followed up because it was not well attended in terms of the Western Cape. And then, Chair, I just want also to support because all the matters are cross-cutting matters in terms of national, provincial, and local. So in terms of the joint committees between the two houses, I think will assist in terms of how these matters can be considered more proper in terms of taking it forward. Thank you very much.
Hi.
Thank you, sir. I just want to check if we could get a list of the application on the draft relief that have been made to the to Treasury, as well as a list of schools where the issue of eradication of backlogs with regard to sanitation has been made. If we could get that list, the problem.
Honourable members, I'm going to step off this item and as we discuss, we'll learn which items are relevant to DORA, I mean appropriations bills, which are relevant to finance and which are relevant to other committees. But so far I think we are doing well. I'm going to step off from this item and go to item number 5, which is the last but one. And it also deals with the procedure. I'm going to request Mr. Nodada, am I pronouncing it well? Okay. To talk to the House and deal with the matter of procedure from here. But I don't know, have we also answered, if it's not answered, the question of Honorable Ryder, fully answered in terms of procedure and in terms of the requirement by the legislation, what is expected of us to do?
Chair, I don't think there's an answer that needs to be given per se. I think it just needs to be noted in the report and some follow-up needs to happen with that province. Thank you.
Okay. Lubaba.
Thank you, Chair President, and good afternoon, honourable members and colleagues. Chair President and members, now that we are here, the process is going to unfold as follows. From this meeting, we are going to put a raw draft of minutes and circulate it to provinces. Provinces are going to need those minutes when they are processing the final mandate. Thirdly, the third province that is going to be affected, in fact, that is being affected as we sit now in Free State. They were supposed to sit at 1:30, but I've liaised with my colleague. That meeting has been postponed because we have not finished yet to 2:00, and also the House sitting has been moved to 3:00. So we are pressed, myself and yourself, but we always make sure that we will schedule the first track minutes to progress. Some provinces are going to sit tomorrow. Going to be the same process. The committees in provinces are going to need the very same minutes to process final mandates, and then final mandates will be taken to their houses, provincial houses. Provincial houses will confer to my committee members for them to vote either in favor or against the bill. That is going to happen tomorrow morning. So hence our meeting is starting at 12. If, say, for example, by 12:00 we have not received a minimum of 5 final mandates, we will have to delay our meeting by maybe another 15 minutes or so, up until we have at least a minimum of final mandate, of 5 final mandates. But mostly, we never experience any challenges in terms of not even receiving the minimum, which is 5. So my colleague, myself and my colleagues in provinces, together with my colleagues here, we always work very closely with provinces in terms of processing the final mandate, receiving the consultation. What is going to happen now? Since we are meeting tomorrow at 12:00, our venue is no longer now this venue is going, it is M201. It's up there, yeah, in this district. So we are going to circulate the draft report that we have. For now, members of the Federal Reserve Board would realize that in the area that is supposed to address the question of final mandate, that area is still outstanding, but we have already highlighted it there. We just tomorrow morning we receive final mandate, populate, and then in the meeting tomorrow we'll bring an updated version of the report. But that would only be the minor changes, and then any other recommendation that we receive from members will kind of update the report as we go along up until the meeting starts tomorrow. I'm not sure if there is any other issue that you would like us to address. If maybe I left something out, I would be guided by your question. Thank you.
I think the best thing is that we give members an opportunity to seek clarities if they don't understand, so that we move together. Is it fine, members? The process is understandable. Thank you so much. Oh, right.
I understand the explanation, but what I want to check whether this process, is it a permanent arrangement for this committee that this gap between the briefing, the negotiating mandates and the final mandates, is it a permanent arrangement that it should be like this pressure in terms of time? And if there's a legislation that governs this process, can that legislation be amended? Because I know we all provinces, I mean all committees are dealing with legislation. I chair a committee, for example. We deal with legislation from time to time, but we don't have this kind of a pressure in between the negotiating mandates and the final mandate. Is there no way that we can address this issue once and for all? Thank you, sir.
I just love what you are saying, because I was in the MAN committee and I was frustrated to say, isn't there anything else that to say? And I came to realize that this is the kind of life that we're doing, each and everything. But let me allow Lubabalo to speak to it, explain it like you explained to me, now that I'm calmer. Okay.
Would it have made a difference if the NTBPS was introduced the week it was supposed to be introduced? Would we have had a week? The NCOP, when we were there with Wendy, the case didn't also raise that issue, so we should put it in our report. This cannot be the norm. If it is the norm, then we need to change. And let me also remind Lubabalo that we amended the Money Bills Act to allow for latitude between the committee chairs and the whips and the house chairs on both sides for an expanded date. But with the adjustment period, Parliament may have to sit an extra week if we do some of those things. But in legal terms, we can now, okay, do it. But let Lubabalo answer as a technical expert.
Okay, I'll allow Lubabalo, Zoma, and Advocate Jenkins to speak to the matter.
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe I think the relevant person who can put the committee at ease is Advocate. But while he is preparing himself, the long and short of it is that when we deal with MTDPS, this is the life of this committee. The challenge is with respect to the time frame. From the day the MTDPS is tabled by the minister to the finalization of processing the whole MTDPS, the institution has only 8 days. From tabling up until the final instrument is produced, which indicates the sequence
committee, for example, the finance committees, they have got a limited number of days to process the revised fiscal framework and revenue proposals. As soon as they are done with that, then the issue of division, the question of division of revenue kicks in. It's referred to the appropriation committees. As soon as we are done with that process, then the NA committee on appropriations must deal with the adjustment appropriations. From there, back to the select committee on appropriations. So the question is sequence, is the sequence right now. But at the beginning of the year, when we process the budget in general, we do have enough time, because we follow the system cycle. But for now, it's difficult to follow the system cycle because of how the legislation is drafted. I'm not sure if Advocate, you're ready to add, and then my colleague, Mr. Roma, to also add.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Let me just read the provision of subsection 19 of section 12 of the Money Bills Act, which says that the Committee on Appropriation, not either one, or both of them, eventually must report to the relevant House within 30 days after tabling of the National Adjustment Budget or as soon as reasonably possible thereafter. So it can, for the specific issue that the member is asking, it can be more than 30 days if there's a good reason. And that's how we amend it. Yes, this is what we did last year to the Act, as Honourable Karim is saying. So we can make more time. There's a very, on the question of Mr. Karim, I would say from where I'm sitting, there's a various reasons why we feel the pressure, or committees of provinces and of the two houses here feel the pressure. I won't be able to say whether it's specifically just that it was later, the MTB budget was introduced later. It usually is a bit earlier. But I think that, together with Parliament's own programming, the fact that we do want to go and leave, or that the houses are rising at a certain time, these all play a role in the total amount of time we have to deal with the adjustments budget. But the issue of the sequencing, which my colleague has referred to, is an important issue. Because it's only after the Division of Revenue Amendment Bill is passed that we can actually consider and report on the Adjustments Appropriation Bill. And all the time the sand is going through the eye of that, of the hourglass. And the time is running out. But I think it's a combination of those. But it is time, I would say, and I'm sure I'm echoing sentiments of members, that we program these things to allow provinces specifically to have proper public hearings on the Division of Revenue Bill and the Division of Revenue Amendment Bill. That's critical. And there's various pressures on that, and I'm not speaking on anybody's mandate here, but what I've heard in the committee, also from the FFC, they need time to brief the provinces, they want to be there, so that we can have proper input. And from the centralist or from the national government's position, the more informed decisions we get from provinces, the better the quality of the decisions at national level will be. So, Chair, let me leave it at that. So it's a combination of factors, and we can take longer, but I think we're just running out of time because of programming as well. Thank you, ma'am.
Yeah, I think the concern that you're raising, members, is very valid. Remember when we had the workshop, members from the legislature themselves saw that they have raised so that we also don't put more pressure and allow other, you know, create space for the legislatures to have a problem. And we have made a commitment that we will do that, give them more space and work very closely with them. So it's only best that we nurture the working relationship between ourselves and the legislatures and SALGA inclusively. With that, members, are you fine with the questions that you've asked? Honorable Khai?
Yeah, no. I've heard what the responses are. But I wanted to check what would be the worst case scenario if some or most of the provinces unable to meet tomorrow to give final mandates. What is the worst case scenario? But also, what is the role of Treasury in all this in terms of these delays, because understand that the MTP is not tabled on the 30th.
Another important instrument that affects our program, the framework of Parliament. I think if members can also assist in terms of lobbying at that level, so that because when it has been issued, it already indicates when is the last sitting of the House. Because if they, for example, were to have the last sitting of the House, let's say on 15 December, then it will give us an opportunity to kind of spread the program to their program nicely and address these challenges. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I'm just concerned because procedurally, the state is sitting at 2 o'clock and the committee is still sitting, so they cannot sit while we are still sitting here. So I'm a little bit worried about that. If we can be time conscious. Thank you.
Noted. Honourable Raila.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yeah, if you look at Gauteng's negotiating mandate, it was signed this morning. And the date of the deliberation was today, which means they met before we did. My first sight of the negotiating mandate was when I was handed the pack today. So fortunately I was involved in the process and I understood it. But it's not appropriate, Chair, and I think we're all in agreement with that. Just to point out that the rules of provinces normally allow the committee to prepare the negotiating mandate to then be ratified by the entire legislature at a later stage. So those are the rules, and I don't believe, well, perhaps it needs to be checked, but you know, I don't believe we have a problem with the mandates that we've received. But perhaps we just need to make sure that all of those rules at local or at provincial level are correct. But I think that's just in answer to our colleague's question.
Thank you very much, honourable members, colleagues. Never mind the fireworks. This is how it's going to be. Team from Treasury. We have agreed that we are going to be the dogs with very sharp teeth. So when you come here, you must know that we are going to do our oversight work. We starting to respect our mandate and take it serious. Let me take this opportunity to thank you, everybody who is here. And I hope that in everything that was said will not be misquoted by our friends in media. If there's anything that you have not understood, please inquire. We will clarify to you. And let's not delay every stage anymore. Thank you very much. See you tomorrow at 12.